Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Russell.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this edition, when the Italian champions took on the Spanish champions, what a tasty dish a calzona was to set before a Neapolitan. Also, it's remarkable, Arnautovic comes good just when Inter needs him. And after Bayern, where next for Thomas Tuchel come summer? Nikki, when the Italian champions take on the Spanish champions in the Champions League, you expect it to be a game with fire, was it?
It's so hard to think of them even as the Italian champions anymore, Dotton. That's how far things have gone in the last, how many months since they actually won the league? I'm not going to have to do that math in my head. I was going to say 6 months. It's more than 6 months, but since May. Napoli right now, they're 27 points off the top of Serie A. Inter feel very much like the Italian champions because they're clearly going to win it this season. And Napoli are a mid-table side. They're ninth. Now, Barcelona have had their own fall. They're champions who are also not looking very likely to contend for the title. But there are scales and scales. And coming into this game, as you've just alluded to in your intro with the Calzona reference, their third manager of the season already, someone who had 48 hours or so to prepare for this game. I think it's sort of a miracle that we got a game of football at all, actually, because at 2 p.m. On Tuesday, local time in Naples, Napoli was supposed to have their first training session under Calzona, and he wasn't even there because he was still being introduced to people, or in some cases reintroduced because he had been at the club before. So that's how short the preparation for this game was. Was there fire? I think there was, actually. I think Napoli, by the end of the game, and this is certainly what Calzona wanted to dwell on at the end, had shown some fighting spirit, had come together. They had a very rough start to the game. The first 20 minutes or so, it looked like they were going to just completely come apart and no one would have been shocked. But in the second half, perhaps Calzona showed some indication of his backbone as well by immediately taking out Kvitcher Kvaratskhelia, who wasn't having a good game, but that's a statement to come in and immediately take out.
When they were still losing.
Yeah.
As well. It felt like quite an early hill to plant your flag into, didn't it?
Yeah, and Kvaratskhelia didn't make it easy for him, made it very clear right away that he wasn't happy about being substituted. Mm. So he showed straight away some character, and I don't know, sometimes it's that whole classic sports journalism thing. Are we just writing our narrative to fit what the sort of random events happen at the end? Victor Osimhen gets his one chance and he takes it. And that changes the story, and Napoli don't lose. And I think they're probably still going to lose the tie, but they did show some fight and they did have chances to go 2-1 up. And I think if nothing else, there's a very easy contrast to draw with at the weekend. They drew 1-1 with Genoa, newly promoted side, who haven't been tearing up any trees. And they needed an injury time equaliser even in that game from Cyril Ngonge, who's a January signing. And they were jeered, they were whistled, their fans were unhappy about it. At the end of this game, the Stadio Diego Maradona, which is always going to give you some fire on a Champions League night, you had that even before kickoff, but was applauding them and thanking them. And I think that sort of is as good a first step you can ask for Calzona. Now, whether it means anything, whether it's all going to end in even more tears, who knows? But yeah, I thought, given the ludicrous circumstances in which they were preparing for this game, it's probably about as good as they could hope for.
Well, talking of those circumstances, a third manager in a season, what's going on there?
Yeah, I think anyone who listens to this podcast has heard this story in stages, at least parts of it. Obviously, last season, they won the league under Luciano Spalletti. They played some of the best football in Europe. Aurelio De Laurentiis, the owner, has been talking about that in the last week, saying, oh, this time last year, we thought we could win the whole thing. We should have gone on to win the whole thing. And they could have done. But De Laurentiis' relationship with Spalletti was difficult for a long time. It started to boil over when De Laurentiis decided to unilaterally trigger the clause in Spalletti's contract, which would have given him a one-year contract extension. Spalletti felt like, well, I've got the team on the way to win the league. Actually, there should have been a conversation and a renegotiation, and I should have been asked how I felt about this.
And rewarded.
And rewarded. And so they parted ways at the end of the season. Perhaps that would have happened anyway. Perhaps Spalletti was looking around and going, I've done everything that I can do here, and I can see that there's going to be an implosion to follow this. That is certainly one theory, but regardless, De Laurentiis didn't handle the situation well. De Laurentiis then hires Rudy Garcia. Rudy Garcia comes in and at his opening press conference says, I didn't watch Napoli last season. De Laurentiis has since said he should have fired him then and there and got rid of him that day, but he didn't. And, do you know, looking back on it now, it feels like the time under Rudy Garcia, everyone should be asking themselves, was it really that bad? Because they were fourth. I mean, they were a long way off their title-winning pace, but they weren't in the straits they are now. Walter Mazzarri is the next appointment. Had been there a decade ago, had done some really good things in that first chapter. I think he...
Did you say a decade ago? You did say a decade ago. A decade ago. It's mad when you say it out loud,
yeah,
isn't it?
I mean, it's I'm being imprecise, but it's about that.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. And they did some good things. They played some great football. I always go back to that Champions League clash with Chelsea in the season that Chelsea go on to win the Champions League. Napoli really nearly knocked them out. Edinson Cavani was playing brilliantly. And Mazzarri deserves credit in the career progression of Cavani. He was really a manager who helped untap him. But in recent years, who has Walter Mazzarri been? He's been a mid to lower table manager who's been going around clubs and playing not especially inspiring defensive football. So he's there for 17 games in total. If we just look at the 12 league games he's at Napoli, they scored 9 goals in 12 league games. It's a team that scored 70 goals in Serie A last season. No team in Serie A scored fewer goals during the weeks that that Mazzarri was in charge of Napoli. They were the lowest scoring team in the whole division. They slipped from 4th to 9th. And yes, after the weekend and the draw with Genoa, De Laurentiis decides he needs to change again, brings in Francesco Calzona, who is the manager of the Slovakia national team, agrees to a job share. I have a theory about this appointment. The facts to say about Calzona are he was the Napoli manager, Napoli assistant manager under Maurizio Sarri first and Luciano Spalletti second. He wasn't there for the title winning season, but he had worked under both those past two managers. So if you're looking for Again, the same term that was applied to Mazzari when he took the job. Traghettatore in Italian, the ferryman, the caretaker, we just want to get to the end of the season. You can point to that obvious case for Calzona. Look, he knows the environment. Both of those managers played 4-3-3. We played our best football last season of 4-3-3. Give him a go. In reality, he has never managed as a first-team manager a club side before, only the Slovakian national team.
Which he's still managing.
Yes, which he's still managing. They've qualified for the Euros, so some success. My pet theory about this, personally, Calzona's assistant for Slovakian national team is Marek Hamzik. Now, Marek Hamzik is a club legend in Naples. I think if you've ever been to Naples and you go around the Spanish Quarter, and I've certainly talked about this on the show before, like there are just tributes and places to literally worship Diego Maradona everywhere you go, murals, little sort of, I don't even know what to
call them. Shrines.
Yeah, shrines, that's the word I was looking for. But there's also murals of other players and dedications for other players. And I would say after Maradona, Hamzik might be number two. There's not many others who are getting as much as he does. Mm. So Hamzik is a figure who absolutely would be popular coming back. And my theory is that De Laurentiis went to Calzona thinking, well, he's got Hamzik as assistant for the national team. He'll bring him along. And Hamzik has sort of said, actually, I've got enough on my plate right now, maybe in the future. So I think De Laurentiis was hoping he'd get Marek Hamzik into the bargain for this one, but he hasn't.
Although he did invite him for a meeting with the Barcelona directors, didn't he, before the game, almost as if to say, yeah, this is my status symbol.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
I think Hamzik will be the Napoli manager at some point. But I do think that in De Laurentiis' mind, maybe even casting an eye at Roma and De Rossi and what's happened,
yeah,
the idea of bringing back a club legend to at least the fans would be like, okay, you get a free pass because
it protects
you
from a certain amount of ire, doesn't it? But I think when we're talking about crises and levels of crises, or obviously it's a bit ridiculous comparing them. But having said that, when you were saying before, Nikki, actually, that Napoli's crisis is much more profound, I think in terms of where they are in the league, fair enough, you've got a point. But as we said at the end of last season, Napoli's last campaign was glorious. The football was glorious. The manner was glorious. The result was glorious. Mm. The fact that they won it for the only time without Diego Maradona was glorious. But they're not expected to win it season after season after season. So that is a slightly different angle. So whereas what has undermined Xavi this season is the fact that they won the double last season, and that was quite an achievement, as David said before. But you don't get a pat on the back for that. You get expected to do it again and again and again. It's like, yeah, that was pretty good, but we were still crap in the Champions League. We still didn't get through the Champions League group stage. So not only are they putting up a really bad title defence, not only have they been schooled by Real Madrid, schooled by Girona, for goodness sakes. You know,
much longer? But we'll wait and see on that.
Well, they already were at home. They conceded 5 to Girona. So whether they catch them or not, you know, we'll wait and see. I don't think it really matters at this point, because Barcelona simply are not going to win La Liga. That's where we are at the moment. Everything rides on this for them. Everything. Sports-wise, obviously, Xavi's coming to an end anyway, so it doesn't really affect his future in that sense. But in terms of the direction in which the project's going, so that Joan Laporta, the president, has stood there and said, oh yeah, everything's still fine. Sports-wise, we're looking good. Financially, we're looking good. Anyone on nodding terms with reality knows that is not the case. And I think the sense is as well, okay, you could spin it one way and say they've come out of the Champions League group last season. They've come out of the Champions League group this season because they're not in the same group as Inter and Bayern this time, which makes them a massive difference. And they've got a draw against a name of substance in Napoli, but one that they really should be beating on current form. And when you have Xavi sitting there in the press conference afterwards going, oh, well, we should have won. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yeah, but you didn't. Honestly, you dominated the game and you did not win it. You allowed a team that had one shot on target to take a draw off you. Okay, you want Osimhen to have that one shot on target, I think it's fair to say. So really, for them to go back and say, well, we're superior, it's shades of actually Mats Hummels talking about Dortmund after the PSV game. It's like, if you can't see the holes in that performance, I know what to say to that.
So are you suggesting that Barcelona are in a worse hole after the draw than Napoli are, and will that impact on the next leg of the draw?
In a sense, yes, because I think that they are expected to go through this more. They're expected to take their place in the quarterfinals. If they lose to Napoli, it's an embarrassment, it's a sporting failure, it's a financial failure, and you know we all know they've got lots of financial issues to deal with in the summer. It is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I think one of the major problems here is the fact that you look at that bench, and Napoli, even in their diminished state, even though they've got to take on, they took Kvaratskhelia off, as you said, Nikki, and they had to take Osimhen off at some point because he's not really fit at the moment. Mm. And Calzona had said he intended to take him off earlier, but he didn't have the moment to do it. And obviously he scored in the bit where he's still trying to take him off.
Genius. I think, absolute genius. Genius. Calzona. Yeah, obviously.
Genius has its real luck, doesn't it?
But when you're a baked pizza.
Yeah.
But I was waiting to do that one.
Yeah, you were. I'm sure you do it again. Yeah. But I think you look at the bench and, okay, you've got players who could affect the game like Guyu, like Vitor Roque, but they're not experienced players. You look at depth on that bench. The experience is basically Sergio Roberto. And that is it. There are more players who could affect that game from the bench for Napoli than they are for Barcelona. And that is a really worrying sign. Never mind what they actually manage to do or not do in this, but it's a really worrying sign for the way they're going. But yeah, for them, they have to get through this. And they've given Napoli an opportunity in that second leg, especially with away goals not counting, that they shouldn't have given them. Whereas Napoli, if they go out, well, they've never won the European Cup. They've never got to be on the quarterfinals before. And if they lose, it's just, you know, the latest disappointment in a season full of them.
Although, I imagine their fans won't be reasoning like Andy there. They'll want to see them improve in Serie A at the very least.
Yeah, I think domestically is where Napoli expect to see some improvement. I don't think you'd find many Napoli fans who expect them to get past Barcelona. I don't think you'd find many even when the draw was made. Neapolitan football fans, because they are not a club that has had that historical success, there's not generally that air of entitlement about them. There's not that expectation of, well, we're supposed to win these things. And
when you're saying entitlement, is Xavi's face like appearing before your eyes?
Well, honestly, I don't know if anyone else felt this, because again, sometimes I wonder if you're sort of fitting the narrative to, I say you, I mean, I am fitting a narrative to the result. But to me, Xavi, even long before the end of that game, I was looking at him on the sideline. He had the air of, I don't mean a defeated on the night air. I mean, like the defeated man in general, a man who just doesn't look like he really sort of has that enthusiasm to be there, that he really sort of is in the place he's meant to be. And of course, he said he's not going to be there next season, so that would make sense.
Which it's sad, given his connection with the club. It's really sad the way it's ended up, given his connection with the club.
And as you say, Andy, those comments in the press conference almost reinforce it. I think from Napoli's point of view, the second leg of this is going to feel like the classic free hit. They will have had some real time, a couple of weeks, still not much, but it's some real time for Calzona to actually implement any of his ideas. I listened to Juan Jesus speaking after this game, and he said, what did you work on in training before this game? Basically, we worked on a couple of set pieces. That's it, because that's all you have time to do in two training sessions. And so by the time they go to Catalonia, it's going to be a different situation. Look, it isn't the Camp Nou, so it's not that intimidating place to go that it has been in past years. I think it's conceivable that the Napoli can find a way through this, but I think they get to go there as the underdogs and without that pressure. For sure, they would like to get back into the Champions League race. The interesting part in all this, which is sort of interesting and tedious to come back to all the time all at once, is Napoli's chance of being in the Champions League next season may be impacted by how well they and other Italian teams do in this European run, because there is that fifth spot up for grabs. And right now, Italy are in pole position for getting a fifth Champions League spot, which would certainly help their causes.
Yeah, and no, I apologise for the bait Pete say. It wasn't even funny, but it was a pun. But the thing that perhaps worries Napoli fans the most is this statement from the Slovak Football Association, who have said, Calzona has repeatedly declared that the main priority of his activity remains the Slovak national football team and its preparation for Euro 2024. So what will they make of that in Naples?
Well, the good news is, and I did think it was interesting that play was definitely going through him quite early on, the good news is he's got Stanislav Lobotka in the middle of his Napoli midfield, who is also in the middle of his Slovakia midfield. So at least that connection they can justify as
doesn't even need to make a special trip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I look out the window.
I sort of don't know what that means. And I think that sitting on the sideline as a journalist, of course, there's going to be all sorts of things that you don't see about what a national team manager's role is. But he has got Hamzik, who is not giving up anything to take on a spot with Naples right now, able to take care of some tasks for him. And the reality is Slovakia have qualified for the Euros, which is the most important part of preparing for the Euros. So I think he's going to be able to give a reasonable amount of his focus to Napoli in the next few weeks at least. And yeah, look, he's not there to revolutionise. I don't think anyone expects him to have the job next season. Obviously, if they won every game from here to the end of the season, that discussion might come up. But I think that what people want from him is to steady the ship and to re-implement some of those things that he might remember from working under Maurizio Sarri, Luciano Spalletti, that worked. And just say, you know what? Enough of you have been here long enough to remember some of this stuff. Just do that again and we'll be all right.
So he can definitely multitask.
Well, we'll find out, I suppose.
Indeed.
If not, four managers this season.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mark my words, or should I say Marco Arnautovic, in the other Italian fixture or part Italian fixture in the Champions League, we saw Inter take on Atleti and do quite well. But that you would have expected that to happen, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Inter are one of the informed teams of Europe at the moment, they're one of the very best teams in Europe, as Nicky has underlined before. What you don't expect is Arnautovic to have to win the game for them. I mean, clearly there's a bit of a twist of fate in that. Marcus Thuram getting injured in the first half. It looks like it's not quite as bad as it could have been. So
but he looked sharp initially with Lautaro, you know, two up front.
The pair of them is perfect.
It looks good.
It's so good. But obviously Inter had a great rolling cast of strikers last season. I mean, they do have squad depth. That has been one of their strengths over the last couple of seasons. I think I felt initially at the start of this season, in keeping with their excellent summer transfer window, that they had a better rolling cast even of rolling forwards for this season. But it's just not quite worked out like that, really. Alexis, who was used to being a very influential player at Marseille, not just in terms of goals, but in terms of all-round play and driving the team forward, has obviously suffered a little bit from being second choice this time. And Arnautovic is clearly not suited to back up. The Arnautovic of Bologna over the last couple of years is not there. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This one needs chance after chance after chance. And that's to finally, in this match at least, score an open goal.
Yeah, and which he almost missed. I think it's a really interesting point, actually, whether he is someone, particularly at his age, you always have the feeling that throughout his career, and he will say he's grown up and matured and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, okay. But I think clearly he's always benefited in his career from being the main guy. And that goes all the way back to when Mourinho talked about him at Inter. And, you know, back in the time where he had his boots embroidered, 2010 UEFA Champions League winner. He's got the experience. He's been there and done it before.
I mean, he's got the medal, Andy. He didn't step onto the pitch, but he's got the medal.
It's got less dirt and fingerprints on it than everyone else's as well. But I think he has benefited from being the main guy. Mourinho talked about him all those years ago and he said, you know, I really appreciate him as a player and a person. He's a child, you know, which I think is pretty blunt. Now, as I said, Arnautovic would say he's grown up since then. But when he's been brought on, he doesn't really seem to have embraced the sub role because he can't switch on straight away. You talked about him missing chance after chance. It's like he's not ready. And despite the fact he scored the winning goal in this game, I come out of it thinking, I really need Thuram for that second leg. And it might work out quite well, Nicky, because the grade of his injury is such that it might mean that he's going to have some league games off that they could probably do with him out without for anyway, because they've got such a huge lead now, you know, 9 points, which could become 12 if they win the game in hand. And so if he comes back for the away game at Atleti, and I think because of the enormous amount of work that Thuram does off the ball, absolutely, he's the perfect guy to play Atleti. He's like, well, you don't run like you did in 2016, do you? This is how you used to run in 2016. He would be such a good player for them, actually, Thuram.
I we'll see on the injury. And then certainly the noise that they're making is that they reckon he could be back for the second leg. And look, no question in my mind at all, the golfing class, I've actually been saying this for a while, I think through a lot of that team, Inter have nice replacements, but up front is where they clearly have a big drop-off. Thuram and Lautaro have been so good together that no one is going to be able to step into that and play as well. In terms of the second leg of this tie, I sometimes feel like it's becoming almost the unspoken thing with this Inter team. Scoring goals might not be necessary. They've kept 21 clean sheets this season. They've kept 21 clean sheets, and I'm not even sure if Jan Sommer's good or not still, because he doesn't have to do anything most of the time.
And that's how they got to the final. That's how they got to the final last year as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's astonishing how little he has to do, how often. I mean, this was the first time since 2006, I think, that Inter have not had a shot on goal against them in a Champions League knockout game. So they really are defending at a different level. But To come back to the question, yes, there's a huge drop off between Thuram and Arnautovic, and certainly if this means Thuram has some fresher legs, that might be a good thing, because he's, because of that fact about the drop off, I think there hasn't been much rotation up front. Thuram has played basically every game this season, so due for some sort of pause.
And so is Lautaro.
Yeah.
More or less, yeah.
But I think when you play the game the way that Thuram does, playing every game it's not really sustainable, is it?
Mm. No, he's extremely hard running. But they both are. They both cover a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. And
diagonal runs as well, which always seem to me to be a little bit further than, you know, straight runs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it comes to the manner in which Marcus Thuram runs as well. He's like, right, I've got my business run on now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's the way he sort of almost digs into the pitch as he's running.
Yeah, he's an extraordinary player, and it's been such a...
Do you remember Valery Bortsov? Sorry to interrupt.
No, go,
do you remember Valery
yes.
Bortsov, who just strangely won the 100 metres in the Olympics final in, when was it, 1972, was it? In Munich, I seem to remember, when these Americans who were faster than him... got the timing wrong. So when it was like 1500 hours for the final, they thought that was 5 o'clock. At least that's the legend. But anyway, interestingly enough, with Valery Bortsov, the way that he ran, which I wouldn't advise, it's the way that you get injuries, is by pounding his feet so hard on the ground that it gives him a little bit of a lift, you know, whereas everybody else runs with high knees.
It looks and almost awkward.
Sort of, yeah, very awkward.
It is similar to Thuram in that way. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I want to go and watch him do some sprints now and and compare. Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Andy. The lead in Serie A has gone in the blink of an eye, frankly. It's four games that Juventus haven't won. In a blink of an eye, it's taken Inter from being in a real title race to suddenly being completely in control of that.
How much do you think the Derby d'Italia has knocked the stuffing out of them?
Oh, completely. It's changed their outlook at Juventus massively. And I think there's perhaps more to it than that. I think Juventus, this whole narrative that we all bought into for a big part of the season, that this is Allegri Ball winning a Cortomuso by a short head, and perhaps the analytics types have been saying all along, well, you can play with fire so long, but actually if you keep having your expected goals be only narrowly above your opponents, at some point you're not going to win, you're going to get unlucky. The game against Verona at the weekend, I think, is a great example, where Fiorentina just scored this extraordinary goal against them, and you go, well, it's an extraordinary goal, and that can happen. And maybe they've just been due for some of those things to happen, because they've been treading their luck for a while.
But do you reckon Simone Inzaghi, for example, is thinking, you talked about Inter's brilliant defence, and if they're going to get anywhere near the Champions League final again, that's going to be a huge, huge part of it. And the way that they defend collectively, we talked about those front players and how much they do, but I just wonder if Simone Inzaghi, while everyone was sort of talking about Allegri and he's made the game come to him, the way they defend, the way they pick teams off, it's magnificent. And I reckon Inzaghi was sitting there going, excuse me.
I think Inzaghi has been extraordinary this whole season, and I think a thing I've heard said in a few places, which I completely agree with, is since going to the Champions League final last season, Inter have found a maturity that they didn't have. They've found a self-confidence they didn't have before that. Mm. And I think that perhaps the greatest illustration of that to me was in the run-up to the Derby d'Italia. Allegri knew his team was overachieving, was quite shy about sort of saying the Scudetto stuff, but he started to do what felt like your classic big game mind games. He started talking about, oh, there's this game of cops and robbers going on at the top of the table, which, in the context of two clubs who've gone through Calciopoli, was absolutely chosen words. It was. That was not coincidental words from Allegri. And then afterwards, he was doing another press conference. He said something about it. Oh, we shouldn't say things like this because we know that Inter are tecci, they're permalosi. And Inzaghi's response to that, you know, of course the journalists love it, they're eating it up. Next press conference, oh, what do you think about what Allegri said about you? Are you permaloso? And he goes, I think what he said was fine. Didn't buy into it at all, didn't treat it as serious, didn't engage with it. So completely detoothed that accusation of being tetchy. And then his team goes and wins the game. And I think that sort of willingness to just make it all business as usual is absolutely part of what's been so impressive about Inter. I do want to come back to Arnautovic, because we went so far off him. I just want to say, absolutely not Arnautovic number one defender here, because he has missed an extraordinary chance this season, all season, not just on that night. There's been that night could have been a synopsis of. But I think actually never in his career has he been a very efficient finisher. Mm. I know he scored goals for Bologna last season, but even if you go back to time at Stoke when he was starting, and you talk to fans of Stoke, I had one tweeting me the other night saying this, he almost has always felt like a striker who, like every miss he has, it just charges him up more for the next one. And I think that as imperfect as that performance was, and it was, you have to give some credit for
continually getting yourself in the spot.
Bloody-minded persistence. Yeah. Because I think that actually, perhaps I could even take it a step further and say, you know what, Romelu Lukaku was a great striker, but sometimes he'd miss a chance and he'd get his head get down.
Even good strikers hide when they miss chances, yeah, don't they? I think we've seen that with, you know, Fernando Torres, like when he got into that real rut at Chelsea, mm-hmm, and he'd get his head down and made loads of runs into the corner of the pitch, which look very industrious for the team,
yeah,
but actually he's putting himself in a spot where he can't miss again. It almost takes that extra bit of bravery, doesn't it, to get yourself in that place to miss again.
I don't know if you saw the spot where Arnautovic was putting himself where he can't miss again. It was in the flipping defence, almost gave away a penalty. Actually, he got away with it, but you're thinking, hang on, what are you doing defending?
The other moment in this game that I sort of almost don't want to get lost, and you see the opposite, which is defenders in the attack. De Vrij in the first half had one of the best runs of the whole game when he suddenly appeared up the pitch, and you realise, oh, but it's De Vrij, he's probably not fast enough to beat his man, and he wasn't. but
I think if you're Diego Simeone, you're looking at that thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind these. I'd really love these. These are my kind of guys, because Atletico, and he has been a staunch defender of his team because he knows that they have interpreted his blueprint, this current set of players, in a slightly different way. And you can go back to them winning the title in a not entirely Atleti way. If you go back to the last title, which is the team is so different from 2014 and 2016. It's different again now. Now, I wonder if sometimes they've struggled to do things in the Champions League, Atleti, in recent years. This is the first time they've been in the Champions League. We think of them as a Champions League perennial. For recent years, they are not. They are no longer that team that first succeeded in the Champions League and got to those two finals under Simeone. They can't defend as well individually or collectively. They can't defend their own boxes as well. And it always felt inevitable that they were going to concede a goal at some point in this. I don't think they came to San Siro thinking, right, we're just going to defend and you're going to have to beat us. Obviously, they wanted to defend well, but I would never trust them defend like an old Atleti team did now. And funnily enough, I think in the closing stages, where it started to open up a little bit, they created enough, and we saw at least one chance where you're like, aren't you a bit curious to have a little go at them? You know, almost Simeone should be giving more empowerment to the players, and generally he's been better at that as time goes by. Go, actually, you know, I've had my way of doing things. You interpret it as you'd want to. And you're in a spot this season where, I mean, there are a massive crossroads in this season because they've got to try and turn around this second leg. I would say Inter are quite heavy favourites. A, because they're the better team, and B, because this is not the Atletico of 2016.
And C, because they don't have the kind of pressures that perhaps Atleti have in the domestic competition, Copa del Rey, for example. We've already said that Inter running away.
Yeah, and it's not a done deal that they're in the top four again, which I think is the most important thing, because economically, Atletico, we talked about Barcelona, Atletico rely on being in the Champions League more than a lot of other teams.
What, you reckon Girona will pip them to the post in that?
Well, no, they'll get in the top four, I think. But they've got to look over their shoulder. Like we saw Athletic beat Girona on Monday. Athletic are fire this season. They're really good. Atletico cannot be certain that they're going to make those top four. I think because Girona, in a way, you're right, because like Girona are kind of gumming up the top four. So if you think them and Real Madrid, it's not quite certain that they're going to make the Champions League, but it looks good for them. So that means you've got, say, two out of Barcelona, Atletico, and a very, very, very good Athletic team this season. And talking of Athletic, they play them in the second leg of the Copa del Rey, as you say, semi-final, competition that they've not won since 2013. They lost the home leg, Atletico, so they've got to go to San Mamés and beat Athletic. That's a hell of a tall order. And, you know, there are things that they can look at. But so you look at the fact that Rodrigo de Paul is playing much better this season than he did last season. He's doing really well. He's grown into being an Atletico player. And he's that little bit of creativity as well that they need, which hopefully in time Artur Vermeeren can provide for them as well. But two things. Firstly, the main thing is, through two lenses, you look at the fact that they're still quite reliant on a couple of players. So when Morata comes on, who's been injured, so he's not really fit enough to start at Inter, they're completely different. Mm. All of a sudden, they're a different proposition. The other thing is, the second bit of it is, when Antoine Griezmann turns his ankle, you think, shit, they're in trouble here. They cannot do without him. I don't think that's necessarily a criticism of Atletico, because you look at Griezmann, he's one of the best players in the world. Yeah. And there's absolutely no doubt about that. But they cannot do without him. And particularly, they cannot do without him in a tie against a team as industrious as Inter.
Well, the maybe big managerial news of the European landscape this week, perhaps not a surprise to anybody that's been following the Bundesliga, Andy, was that Thomas Tuchel is, he's not long for this Bayern Munich, is he?
Well, that's the thing, that we were expecting it to end maybe in a quite different way. Like, you know, right, you're done. Cheerio.
Yeah.
Thanks for everything. Two-line statement on the club website and there you go. But, I mean, I had my theory at the start of the week, which was that they won't fire him because there are no plays. There are no plays to make. And I think that's almost backed by the fact that you look at the people who are like sounded out for taking on the short-term role. Hansi Flick, who was amazing the first time, but he took over a team of leaders. There are no such leaders this time. There is no Alaba. There is no Boateng. Manuel Neuer's a bit diminished. Thomas Müller's just perpetually angry. Whether Tuchel's got a role in that, I don't know. But and then the other one, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I know there will be lots of listeners.
Nowhere. That came out of nowhere for me. Anyway.
But it says that sometimes the best ability is availability. And, you know, that is all that can be said for it, really. And, of course, when he arrived at Manchester United, first off, we have to say, he did have a great effect in the very, very short term. But
not necessarily because of his skills as a manager.
Yes, exactly. You know, that's a different conversation.
Okay.
But if we keep it on Bayern, that they've not really taken a decision on Tuchel, because it's not really easy for them to do so. So I don't know if this is the season, Nicky, of the lame duck manager. So
I was just thinking,
Xavi's gonna limp through to the end of the season with Barcelona because there's no real alternative. Tuchel, well, we don't really want you, and you don't really want to be here anymore, even though you've been here less than a year. So we're going to let you limp through to the end of the season. Napoli would have been happy to let Mazzarri limp through to the end of the season if it didn't become completely untenable either.
Yeah, if it wasn't 9 goals in 12 games. And on top of that, in a very different context, but there is also Jurgen Klopp saying, I'm leaving Liverpool at the end of the season. So it is an odd season for lots of big club jobs.
I mean, that's the Kobe farewell tour, though, isn't it? Sure. That's different.
But I don't know. It almost feels like it's a trend now. Like, we make our decisions about the fact that we're leaving or being pushed months before the end of the season, and you have these weird, elongated chapters that I'm not sure favour everybody. Now, of course, Liverpool is a different case and perhaps should be treated as such, because there, this is his narrative, seems to be very firmly, well, it's going to galvanise everyone because it's his last go. Although I always think about Sir Alex Ferguson tried that and he didn't like it and then ended up staying longer, didn't
well,
he?
Well, so, it's not that he didn't like it. He didn't win anything that
right,
last season.
Yeah.
He wanted to
well,
win
that's
one
why
more.
He didn't like it.
Yeah,
so,
of course not. Yeah, of course, yeah.
But it is a very particular situation that you have all these big clubs in that spot. It does make you wonder what conversations are going to start happening behind the scenes about successes in those jobs, because I can't imagine a club like Bayern Munich or Barcelona is just going to sit on its hands and go, oh, we'll figure it out in the summer.
Once upon a time, of course, if you don't mind me just throwing something in the mix here, I don't think we can conclude this conversation without, you know, referencing the elephant in the room, which is Xabi Alonso. And his name has come up in association with this Bayern possible job. But obviously, I'm not, you can disagree, but I don't feel that there's a snowball's chance in hell that he's going to go to Bayern. However,
why do you feel that? I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, but why do you feel that?
Well, first of all, Bayern is in a mess. He's better off staying where he is in that case, if you're going to stay there. But also, look, he doesn't have skin in their game, whereas the two other suitors for his hand, he clearly has a lot more.
He kind of does, doesn't he? Because I think the thing that, say, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge would say, and Rummenigge is a man not just who has a massive influence on modern Bayern, and Bayern being the behemoth that they are, is excellent foresight. And I think it's notable, when Xabi Alonso was still at Real Sociedad B, before he'd even been offered the Borussia Mönchengladbach job, which was over a year before he took the Leverkusen job, and he decided, no, it's not the right time. He just came in, Rummenigge, and said, yeah, I can imagine Xabi Alonso here one day. We are watching his career with great interest. Mm. And then he turns up at Leverkusen and he says it again. And so he's kind of getting, I've got first dibs on him. First dibs on him. But you're right, because of the state that they're in upstairs, and you wonder with Hoeneß and Rummenigge, they're trying to steer Bayern in a certain direction out of these choppy waters. You know, they're still not, that you wonder with Hoeneß and Rummenigge, are they in? Are they out? And it's a bit of both. And you're right. I think you look at that if you're Xabi Alonso and you think, even if Liverpool don't have a sporting director at the moment, they're the sure bet, right?
Mm-hmm. Also, what can you offer as Bayern Munich? Because the other thing in my head is you've spent 100 million on Harry Kane last summer. Now, great, new manager gets to work with Harry Kane. No one's going to turn their nose up at that. But it's not like you're going to get told, come in, here's a project where you can do it all your way, is it? The money's going to be a little bit tighter after that for the next summer, or I would imagine, anyway.
And they've got major things to do as well.
Yeah.
You know, they still need that major defensive midfielder. There's going to have to be a clear out as well. I mean, you look at all the fuss with Joshua Kimmich, and this is one of the things that started to make Thomas Tuchel untenable, really, is Kimmich, who had a terrible game in last week's 3-2 defeat to Bochum, OTC game of the week, of course.
We're coming to that. I was going to keep... I'm
sorry. I don't mean to knit your lines. No. But I just want to focus on Kimmich here, because he's not been good for Bayern for a while. They have been lining up an exit for this summer because he's got a year left on his contract. With the way he's been playing and with him not really growing into the leader that they wanted, they're not going to back up the Brinks truck for him. You know, they don't want to do that. They could sell him to PSG. They could sell him to Barcelona, finances permitting, et cetera, et cetera. And that would be a better solution. But
God, that's such a PSG transfer, isn't it?
Isn't it? but the fact that in this game at Bochum, Kimmich plays badly. He comes off. He sits there on the bench with a face like a slapped arse, looking absolutely sulkmongous, and then at the end he has this massive row with Tuchel's assistant Zoltlov, and it becomes visible to some people, and becomes visible certainly to journalists as they're coming down the tunnel. And Bayern just put out this, like, they'll come out and say, oh well, you know, it's not really for public consumption. Well, don't do it in public then. That's the obvious answer to that, isn't it? Wait until you're back in the dressing room, or even better, wait until you're back at the training centre at Sabinerstrasse and have, like, a civilised discussion behind closed doors. But they can't keep it in. I know Bayern aren't the best at keeping it in at the best of times, but it just shows, like, what a lack of control there is, really, at every level.
I'm just curious, actually, Andy, like, what you think the profile of the next Bayern manager is, because I think maybe I'm overstating it now in my mind with everything you've just said as well. Like, how attractive is this job to someone? Because we've been talking recently about Simone Inzaghi and how his stock is rising, and assuming he goes on and wins the league, I think he's going to be in conversations for big jobs when they come up. But Inter is already a big job, and he's got a lot of things there that he likes and that he's built and that he's managed to create organically. Would he want the Bayern job? I don't actually know that he would, which sounds extraordinary to say in some ways, because it's Bayern.
But that's the thing, isn't it? What they don't want to do is be edging towards Manchester United, where you're interested in the job because it's the name.
Yeah.
Because what Bayern have always had to recommend them above a lot of their European competitors is that stability. The fact that these guys are just going to take care of everything upstairs. All I've got to do is coach the team. That's what Pep Guardiola loved so much about being there. He didn't have to do any of the other stuff. Just concentrate on making it the absolute best on-pitch product that there is. And nothing else matters. They'll fight my battles for me in the media. They'll get the transfer business done. They'll crush the opposition. All that other stuff, they'll do. All I have to do is produce the football. Now, if you're Xabi Alonso, I think you're right, Don. I think you look at everything upstairs at Bayer Leverkusen. Leverkusen is a beautifully oiled machine. And even when Liverpool, even when they've lost key personnel, they've known how to replace them well. Whereas at the moment, Bayern are just in this weird sort of netherworld. I don't think you want to do anything until Max Eberl comes in, which is next month, who's going to be the sporting director, even though they've already got another sporting director. How that works out and who takes what responsibility, I think is still a question. And I think it's instructive, the sort of people who are briefing that they're interested in the Bayern job. So Mourinho's interested. He's learning German.
Of course.
Conte's interested. Yeah. And in the past, I think Bayern
like
would have said...
I like the idea of Conte. I think what you just said. Yeah.
But it's good for us. Is it good for them?
But what you just said about... you trust the club to crush everything else and you just focus on the football. I mean, that is, at the very least, it's what Conte has said he's wanted everywhere he's been. Whether or not it's really what Conte will settle for, maybe it's a different conversation.
I don't think he wants someone else to take care of business for him. I think
big complaint at Inter was that the club weren't strong enough in standing up for him. And so I think if Bayern...
But doesn't he want someone to do exactly what he wants to do?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's slightly different, isn't it? I think it is interesting that these sort of personalities are into it. Whereas if you're Xabi Alonso, you're a little bit more... You're not that sort of public firebrand, are you? You know, you want it to be collaborative. And I think you look at that at Bayern and think, does it really work? And also, what are you going to do? Go and win the Bundesliga again? If he wins the Bundesliga with Leverkusen, what's the point in going and winning at Bayern?
In the context of what you describe as lame duck coaches announcing their departures mid-season, as it were, in that context, have we not been here before with a kind of a stalemate of coaches waiting for one particular coach to
the housing chain?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Musical chairs. Are we not in that situation at the moment, would you say?
I think to some extent, maybe. Yes. I mean, the Liverpool job is obviously the biggest domino to fall. And a lot of us, I think, have jumped to this assumption that it's going to be Xabi Alonso. And certainly it fits.
Xabi Alonso, for me, it seems that he is the key to all the other... pieces falling in place.
Well, so once he's off the table, then other clubs will change their list of priorities.
Exactly. Once we know what he's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a bit of a weird recruitment process if you start out with Xabi Alonso and you end up with Conte.
Okay, it's your time, Andy.
I do like a bit of Bayern drama.
Listen.
Yeah, don't we all?
I planned to, fall at your feet and tug my forelock to you. I planned it for days, ever since you gave us the advice to watch the Bayern-Bochum game last week. I'm coming up to a game of the week now, but did you want to take the plaudits?
Look, it was fun.
It was the best shout.
We all enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And
pressure on you, Nicky, by the way.
Like I said, we did have the Bochum goals going in and Bayern being taunted with the can-can. I mean, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You suggested that was what was going to happen. It was like they were listening to OTC last week.
I think they had a little listen. And when Takuma Asano equalised in the first half, I counted it because I was interested to know.
Oh, you counted the seconds?
Yeah, they played the can for 43 seconds. You see, if they were non-OTC listeners, maybe they would have like thought 30 is probably
don't
enough.
Don't worry, Nikki. I'm setting him up for his game of the week this week. Do you want to go first?
I'm happy to. Yeah.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Game of the week.
For me, it's an easy pick this week. Milan against Atalanta on Sunday night. Third against fourth in the table, for one thing. Atalanta did beat Milan just a few weeks ago in January. They beat them in the Coppa Italia. Atalanta have scored 17 goals in the last five games. And even better, because it's the
That's bonkers. Yeah,
It's the Charles de Ketelaere derby, as far as I'm concerned. Charles de Ketelaere, who was Milan's big summer signing last summer, they paid about 30 million euros for him. There was a lot of hype around him. He then played 40 games for them without scoring a goal, and goes to Atalanta on loan with an option to buy, and he's been revived. I think he's up to something like, I think it's 9 goals and 7 assists for Atalanta this season, and a lot of them coming in the last few weeks. He's really starting to show his personality as a footballer, and he's such a fun footballer to watch when he's confident. He's got, I keep going back to the Mesut Ozil comparison for me, although I know others have compared to, for instance, Josip Iličić, who was such a creative force at Atlanta for a while. So I think a great game in store there. That again, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the race for the last Champions League spot in Italy does look like it's going to get pretty fierce as well. So pressure on Atlanta to keep winning. I'm going to diverge from my usual here and say, because it's a Charles de Ketelaere derby, I'm not going to give you an Italian dish. I think it's time for Mulfried, some mussels and chips for Sunday evening.
I think that's a great choice. Although I did half wonder, as it's going to be quite spicy, whether you're going to go for harissa on pasta.
You can tell that story.
Yeah.
We'll save that one for, okay, for another
it's a good
time.
One. We'll save it for a tastier dish. Yeah. What about you, Andy? A game of the week recommendation for us?
Spicy too. Bernabeu Sunday night. So you're going to have to two screen it to watch both me and Nikki's choices. It's the return of Sergio Ramos to the Bernabeu with Sevilla. Mm. Real Madrid versus Sevilla. This would have been a walkover even 3 weeks ago. Sevilla have started to find some backbone, and I don't think there's any coincidence that it's because they've made the team a little bit younger. Obviously, the figurehead
apart from Sergio Ramos.
Yeah, apart from Sergio Ramos, yeah. I think you've got to have some experience in there, haven't you? Particularly, I just can't wait to see how it's going to unfold. The fact that Sevilla are more competitive, they've kept a couple of clean sheets in a row. And I think we talked at the beginning about defending as a team when we were talking about Inter. I think that's really important. Isak Romero, since he's coming from the B team up front, has added goals, but just energy and personality. And they were just like schlepping around the pitch. Like, I was going to say, like, Jonjo Shelvey playing at Rizespor, but that would be really unfair. a man who looks like he's going for a jog while a football match is on.
But I
think Sergio Ramos has always had it in him to, even though he's a serial winner, to be useful for a team in a relegation battle because he loves the battle. Now, this is the ultimate stage for him to prove it. There's no doubt about that. Look, As it's in the capital, Sergio Ramos is the most Spanish man I can think of. It's got to be belt and braces tapas. We've got to get the proper patatas bravas out there. We've got to get some chorizo in there. We need
I'm
a tortilla
so
española.
Right.
Yeah, me too. It's approaching that kind of time. Sergio Ramos will be hungry as well when it gets to Sunday.
Sergio Ramos derby, can you call it that?
Oh yeah. Well, you certainly can.
Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure to subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right.
because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.